if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and happy new year. Welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 286. This is our 2024 The Century Bets Pod. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss our selection for this week's PGA Tour action. Good morning, gents.
Morning. Happy New Year, guys.
Morning, guys. Happy New Year.
Please subscribe to this podcast as you drive the popularity of the show. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world-famous golf betting system website where we have in-depth betting preview for the century. We've got strokes gained rankings. They are really, really good to look at. Course form statistics combined with current form stats, plus, of course, our predictor model. All of that content, all of that data is completely free of charge. There's no paywall. On X, Barry is at A Good Talk Goal. Paul is at Golf Betting. And I am at Bamford Golf. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where this podcast is available, along with my weekly golf betting show. And of course, we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. We've got one. Now, I have to say, this is the only one we have. So again, now that we're starting to build in 2024 towards that first major, can we have your five-star reviews both on Apple but also on Spotify? Now, this one is entitled Great Podcast, 5 stars. The best golf podcast ever. Great stats. Great banter. This bit makes me laugh a little bit. Sensible tips. I never miss an episode. Keep up the great work, guys. And that's from Steph. And he's in Northwich in Cheshire. I used to go to Northwich quite regularly, you know. I used to go to Northwich to see Northwich Victoria versus Stevenage Borough back in the day.
Where are they now?
Well, Stevenage, League One.
No, Northwich.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm going to say they must have dipped down.
National League North, is it? Or I don't even know if they're there. Have they gone bankrupt? I think they went bankrupt, potentially.
Maybe.
And then, guy, say thank you to Steph in Northwich.
Yeah, thanks, Steph. Sorry, it's all trying to get back into gear after
into the flow. Yeah,
yeah. After a few weeks off. Yeah, thanks, Steph. Much appreciated. Nice to have your views and opinions. We'll see if we can get some sensible selections out later. There may be a few curveballs thrown in there, I guess. But and see what Barry's got.
Yeah, can't all be sensible. I have to be chaos, right? thank you for the review. That's lovely. And you sent Steve down memory lane. I'm glad he's not that old because he'd be gone for about 20 minutes on a ramble.
I believe there used to be a salt mine then, but we're not going to go down that Northwich track any further. Right, first event of 2024. I must say, now they've got this extended field, because this used to be, of course, winners only. I mean, we're going back a few years there. But we've got a field this week of 59 players. Now, that brings into, you know, when you were dealing with 31s and 32s, clearly the betting market was very, very, what's the word? It was short prices at the top and very, you know, there were a few no-opers at the bottom at like 300 to 1. Now you've actually got a decent betting board to go at. 59 players. The only player that qualified and isn't attending is Rory McIlroy. He will, I believe, Paul, shoot me down if I'm wrong. I think he's starting his calendar year at this new Dubai Invitational event. Would that be correct?
Yeah, next week. So we've got the Dubai Invitational and then followed by the Dubai Desert Classics. So Rory's penciled in for both of them by the looks of it, which is good.
Yes. I think the Invitational, has that got an amateur aspect to it?
Yes.
I think he's like playing with his dad, effectively.
It looks like a 60-man field, 60 men and 60 amateurs playing.
Yes.
But yeah, Dixon Field by the looks of it, McElroy, Fleetwood, both the Huygards, that kind of affair. So it should be a good one to get our teeth into next week.
So yeah, the DP World Tour actually starts this year a week earlier with that particular new event. Right. So 59 players this week. Now, the one player we haven't got, apart from Rory McIlroy, is, and it hasn't been mentioned on the PGA Tour website, amazingly, is the defending champion, John Rahm. Now, we haven't recorded a podcast since John Rahm's big move to LIV. Barry, let's start with you. Your thoughts on the John Rahm move?
It is what it is. He had an opportunity to go take a bunch of money. He's got his exemptions for multiple years in the majors.
Five, yeah.
Yeah, I get it. At this stage, I'm just kind of tired of it. The whole LIV PGA Tour split thing. It's I'd like to see it back together in some way. The split's just a pain in the ass at this stage, and I suppose with the golf media just having to focus on it so much, it just becomes tiresome. So the sooner they figure out something, the better. I think other than Rory, Rahm was the biggest name that they could have got to do so. Well, like Tiger accepted, but maybe him going accelerates some sort of merging or reconnection. I don't know. I'm kind of just tired of it. It is what it is. He's off there. He's not going to make me want to watch LIV. I just think the format's a bit wishy-washy. So, yeah, that's a very uninspired answer to it, but I think that's a symptom of having gone through this for the last, 2 years. I think we're all a bit tired of it, perhaps. Let's see what happens. I don't know.
Throughout the interviews, you know, all the interviews they had with players over, it's just gone on forever. This is the thing. It is tiresome. I never thought John, when he was questioned about LIV, he was always supportive of the PGA Tour, but it was never equivocal. It was never, I'm never going. It was always, well, I can respect all of the players that have gone, they've all gone for their own reasons. So he did very much leave the door open. Mm. And there was always rumours that he was quite good friends with Phil Mickelson, because they used to play a lot. When John first came on the scene, he used to play a lot of practice rounds with Phil. A hell of a lot. Mm. Scottsdale connection, blah, 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 blah. So, and then it was interesting, I thought, within 24 hours of the news coming out, there's Rory McIlroy going, we need to change the rules. We must have John Rahm in the European team. He's gone full 360. Because we've got a top quality player going to LIV now, we need to change the rules so that John can play for Team Europe in the Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
So I kind of said that as well. It's all coming together eventually. We all know that. Yeah. It's just in what format that looks like.
I wonder if the end game, if they already know it, and these are just all the pieces playing out. Yeah. It needs to take time for that to happen. So maybe they all know the end resolution or a very close approximation of that. They just need to go through the machinations of it all to get there.
Yes. I think that was the dig in the ribs that the PGA Tour definitely needed just to keep the momentum moving forward. Oh, we've just taken John Rahm. Oh, okay.
There's a long time, a long, long way before we get to the Ryder Cup for things to have been resolved. I think to pick one element of what you said, Barry, which I think is the crux of it, doesn't make you any more likely to want to watch LIV. Rahm going, and if that's magnified across the golfing viewership across the world, and that sentiment replicates itself, then the objective of spending all the money to grab Rahm hasn't achieved that part of it. We're not getting thousands or millions of viewers or additional viewers on the YouTube channel for LIV to justify that. So I don't know. Tiresome is.
But like that opens an even bigger question: is do they actually care whether LIV is successful or not?
Well,
the whole thing is like get a ticket at the global business table, and to a certain extent, it has achieved that for the Saudis. They've got more recognition and prominence and connections to bigger businesses, and it is literally the definition of sport washing, or at least as I understand it, it has been a reasonable success for them. And 300 million is a couple of days of profit. You know, so it's a drop to them.
Yeah, that's a very good point there. 300 million is probably good value. Can you imagine how much it costs for that boxing event that they had 3 days before Christmas when they had Joshua and they had all of the big heavyweights over there?
Yeah, Wilder, yeah.
Wilder. I mean, there's probably 125 million just for those two combined. So actually, John Rahm for five years, yeah, for 300 million. Yeah, it's relatively good value.
Yeah, there's no way he gets all of that money if the, let's say, everything washes out and the two entities merge together into one tour again in a year and a half's time. He'll get pro rata. So that's an end game amount of money if he goes all the way. So it's the investment right now is almost minimal when you think about the effect or the impact that they want to have with it.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've got dragged down an awful rabbit hole. I think I'm partially responsible for.
Well, I thought I needed to mention it because we didn't do the Christmas show that I promised. We couldn't be bothered. Mm. So I just thought it was worth mentioning John Rahm before we go into the actual betting contest this week. Let's move on to the century, shall we? Let's actually start talking about betting that we want to get into. Right. Let's talk about the course firstly. The Plantation course at Kapalua. It's on Maui, island of, in Hawaii. Next week we move to Honolulu for the Sony Open. It's a Court and Crenshaw design. It's a 1991 original. It had a 2019 renovation, which has materially changed the course. I didn't think it would, but it has. It's just meant, basically, that the greens are easier and that the scoring is lower. I categorise this event as coastal. I mean, it's not actually at sea level. It's up above the sea, but you can. It's just panoramic views of the Pacific. It's a resort scoring golf course. I don't think you're going to see anything. It's going to be 25 under and lower winning this week. This one's a bit strange. It's a long golf course because it is. It's 7,596 yards, but it doesn't play as a long golf course because a lot of these holes are plunging down big hills. This is it. It's a very undulating golf course. Now, I always used to say that this course and, of course, Augusta National were the two courses that we get on the tour each year with the biggest undulations, the biggest contours and changes in terms of that kind of angle. We've now, of course, had the one at the end of last year they played in Mexico. That was a very similar kind of course where it was uphill, downdale, big, wide, huge fairways. This course is very similar to where they played that WWT Championship. Now, that was bedecked. El Cardinal was all Paspalum. This is all Bermuda grass. So, Celebration, Bermuda grass, rough, and fairways. The greens are Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass. They are massive, 8,722 square feet. So, basically, it's just driver away. It really, it's also a par 73. It's the only par 73 on the tour. It's got a 36-37 par split. It's quirky as hell. 11 par fours, 4 par fives, and only 3 par threes. But there are 8 425 yard and below par fours in distance. And this is it. And it was noted by John Rahm. He basically said, and I don't think it's just a John Rahm thing or a Bomber thing. He said, look, most players here, it's just get the driver out and it's a wedge fest on a lot of these holes. Mm. So, yeah, the scoring is there. It's just available. The only defence of this golf course is wind, and we're not seeing a lot in the forecast on Windfinder. It's pretty much, I would suggest, exactly what we saw 12 months ago. So 15 to 20 miles an hour winds Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And it looks like, I mean, it's early doors. We're only recording this Tuesday morning in the UK. It looks like Sunday is really going to be lights out with even lower winds, probably sub 10 miles an hour. So people shooting 61s and 62s very much in play on Sunday, potentially. And that sort of, that was interesting what we saw 12 months ago with John Rahm. Colin Morikawa went into Sunday 6-shot lead and didn't convert. Rahm shot, I think, a 62.
Yeah, 62 or 63.
So 63 yeah. It was, 63, 10 under. So yeah, that's what we're dealing with. It's basically bombs away, driving accuracy negligible. If you are missing fairways, you could be tumbling down towards cliffs and all manner of all manner of stuff to right-hand side a lot of these holes, because it does. There is a stretch that runs kind of parallel with the sort of the coast. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's not overly onerous. It is a difficult walk though. There's, I think it's 600 feet or something of elevation change. The caddies always moan. They're not moaning though if they're bagging sort of a percentage of 1.8 million or whatever the winner's prize will be this week.
Tough gig.
Right, let's talk about bookmakers. This is where we're at. Now, kudos to three bookmakers. They are offering eight places each way of 50 odds at the Century across a short 59-man field. Those three bookmakers are Bet365, Betfred, and Boyle Sports. Now, Boyle Sports are offering it as a default market. Betfred are offering it as an extended market. And, of course, Bet365, as they do, are offering it as their each-way extra market. So that's available to increase, or you could even decrease the number of places when you are betting pre-event on the Century outright market. Now, I've used their Bet365's eight place each way at 50 odds market on three of my four selections this week. And right now, they are offering extended market best odds and eight places each way on market leaders such as, right, Patrick Cantlay. Right now, I can back him 14 to 1, eight places each way with Bet365. He's only 11 to 1 with Betfred in their eight places market. Now, I had a very good look at Jason Day this week. He's 45 to 1 with Bet365. He's only 33 to 1 with Betfred in their eight places each way market. Eric Cole, I mean, if you want a hot player, hot form, Eric Cole's your man. 60 to 1 with Bet365, eight places each way. He's only 40 to 1 with Betfred. That is incredible. And Cam Davis is another one I like the look of this week. 66 to 1 for the big hitting Australian. He's only 45 to 1 with Betfred in their eight places each way market. That's incredible. So 66 to 1, eight places with 365. 45 to 1 with Betfred, eight places. Boosts for 365 this week. Victor Hovland, 8 to 1 to 9 to 1. We've also got Tommy Fleetwood, 28 to 1 to 33 to 1. We recommend Bet365. If you are 18 plus and do not have a Bet365 sports account, you can find details of their current Bet £10, get £30 in free bets, new customer promotion, plus a link through to that very offer with T's and C's in the in this podcast description. Don't forget to use the bonus code Paul, first time for 2024. What is the bonus code that they need?
Well, thankfully, it hasn't changed. Otherwise, you could have stumped me there. It's Sport30, S-P-O-R-T-3-0.
Sport30 when registering. Right, trends. When you look at the strokes gain trends for this, and this goes all the way back to 2016 now, so Spieth through to John Rahm last year. A little bit, when I look at this, I look at where that particular week the champions fell in their individual skill set categories. So strokes gained off the tee, fourth in the field. This is the weird one. Strokes gained on approach, 10th in the field. Strokes gained around the green, 8th. Now, I can't find another golf course where the positions for strokes gained around the green are stronger than for strokes gained approach. Strokes gained tee to green, 3rd, and strokes gained putting, 4th. If I look at the traditional statistics, you know, the old driving accuracy, distance, greens in red, blah, 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 the ones that really shout are Greens in regulation, 8th in the field. Scrambling, 9th. High again. You need a short game here. Putting average, 3rd. That's crazy. So I'm going all the way back to Jeff Ogilvie in 2010. He shot 22 under that week. The winning player's average across all of those 14 renewals is 3rd for putts per GIR. You've got to have a hot putter. And that gives me hope, chaps. That gives me hope that people that are niggling away at 6-1 on Scotty Scheffler might not get the victory this week. Listen to these stats as well. These are strokes gained stats putting for the last 4 or 5 winners. I'm not including Justin Thomas because the year he won was a 14-under winning total, which told you, yeah. And it's true, it was blowing 35 to 40 miles an hour virtually every day. So it was actually really tough. Right, John Rahm last year, 6.06 strokes gained with the putter. Cam Smith, 6.47. Harris English, 6.84. Xander in 2019, this was before the changes to the greens, 5.36. Now, I could go and find the last time that Scotty Scheffler found over 5.5 strokes with the putter. And I can guarantee you it's quite a long while ago. That gives me hope that Scotty Scheffler could be beaten this week.
Mm.
And what you tend to get here, I'll just get this point out, Paul, and then you crack on with that. It tends to be favourite wins this, or someone deeper in the odds. So 7-1 favourite Rahm last year. We've had a Justin Thomas win in 2020, 11-2. Dustin Johnson, 15-2. Jordan Spieth, 5-1. And then apart from those, you're getting 14-1 Dustin Johnson, 14-1 Zach Johnson, 22-1 Patrick Reed, 22-1 JT, 22-1 Xander, 28-1 Cam Smith, 33-1 Harris English. So we could. It's either going to be Scheffler or Hovland that wins this, or someone that 28 to 1 mark wins it. Over to you guys.
I think if the overriding point of this, and you only need to look at the winning scores from the last few years, as you say, accepting the kind of freak result that was there for the JT win, you've got to have a hot putter. And I'm with you in that respect. You know, Scotty Scheffler's won the Hero. He's in some great form overall. If you look at his performances, particularly the kind of mid to latter end of last year, the underlying form there is there, but the putter still isn't quite right. I think he was a little bit better at the Hero from what I kind of eyeballed, but could you see him getting to 25, 28, 30 under to win this? That's an awful lot of putts that have got to drop, and there's no guarantee with Scotty that that is going to happen. You know, for a guy that's been already backed into 11-2, I suspect there's going to be even more blue on his name this, you know, as we go through today, the day to day on Tuesday.
He won the Hero in early December and he gained 0.8 across 72 holes with the putter.
Yeah.
And he won that by 3 shots from our friend of the podcast, Sepp Straka. He's got to win this. That putter needs to be far hotter.
Mm. I mean, that's a relative improvement because I'm just looking.
Oh yeah,
at
it is. Yeah,
his previous 5 outings were all negative strokes gained.
Yeah, putting. Yeah, yeah.
So it is a step forward, but yeah, going back to those numbers you read through earlier, he needs to be improving that by 5 or 6 strokes gained over the course of the 4 days.
Last year, his best putting performance was 4.16, and that was at the Phoenix Open, which he won. No other putting performance was anywhere near the levels that it needs to be this week.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as you said,
question.
I'm counting up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 5 seriously negative strokes gain putting performances going back to the Scottish Open in July on the PGA Tour.
Have you seen any correlation in grass types versus good, bad putting performances for Scotty? Is there anything in there?
I have, and we've mentioned this a lot of times. This Scotty Scheffler is a Bermuda grass green monster. Only one of his PGA Tour victories has been on anything bar Bermuda grass, and that was bent grass at Augusta. And as we know, the whole of that course is bedecked in Bermuda, apart from the putting surfaces, and they've got a Bermuda base below them as well. But anyway,
yeah.
So yeah, I mean, this is his putting best putting surface for sure. Whether he can squeak this out and win in a playoff or by one shot with a sort of 2 points something gained, because clearly, and we all saw the stats from last year, his strokes gained tee to green numbers were the best ever seen apart from Tiger Woods.
Yep.
Over multiple seasons for Tiger. So whether he can win this with a barely positive strokes gained putting metric, we will find out. But to me, it encouraged me to actually go deeper in the betting market. Not that we as a team need that encouragement. We tend to gravitate away from 5-1 favourites, don't we? Or 11-2.
Go on, Barry.
Isn't that the hardest thing I find? Well, the hardest thing I find about this tournament is, as a human being, it's difficult to know where you're at just coming off Christmas. And so how do you figure out, like, it's a bit of potluck, it feels, to pick guys to go well this week, more so than maybe any other week of the year, because it's just that funkiness of the, you know, early January, just coming off Christmas. You don't know whether people have had good, bad Christmases, busy, quiet, how that's impacted them. Have they been able to pick up the clubs? Does that work or not work for them? It's a little bit of a roulette wheel, whether your guy goes well or not this week.
Yeah, yeah. And then you occasionally hear of players who've been out in Hawaii, for a few days before, flew over a week early to get some early practice in. And, often those little tidbits of information will only come out as we get into the week, which doesn't really help us on a Monday or a Tuesday morning. But, that's how it is.
Here's an angle that might help you, Barry. 13 of the last 15 winners here all played competitive golf in December, be that in Australia or at Tiger's Hero World Challenge and or at that shootout that they have in Florida. Used to be the QBE or Shark Shootout. I think it was something Grant Thornton Shootout. And it was this year, it was mixed, wasn't it? Girls and boys?
Yeah.
Jason Day won that, just out of curiosity. There was a list of decent players in there. I think Corey Connors finished second, potentially.
I watched a bit of that. It was good fun to watch.
Well, this is it. It's competitive golf, and it was only about 3 weeks ago. So there's an angle there. That's the angle I'm taking. Patrick Cantlay would suit this event. We know with Patrick Cantlay, he can go super, super low. But actually, he hasn't played competitive golf since the Ryder Cup. So that, to me, is just a line through the name. There are ways of managing the field down. But yeah, I agree. Yeah. Who knows? A lot of these golfers, especially ones with kids, they're probably likely to have less opportunity to practice than the younger sorts who don't have those responsibilities. Saying that, John Rahm won this last year and he's clearly got kids. So
it's
all swings and roundabouts, really. I've gone for four this week, chaps. Anything else before we move on to our selections, or you happy where we're at?
No, go for it.
I don't think there's much else to talk about the course. I have gone for friend of the podcast, Max Homer. Now, I chose him at 14-1. I only took six each way with William Hill. He was 12-1 with Bet365. I think he still is. 2.5 points each way on Max Homer. We know with Max, if I'm looking at Max Homer at the same price point as Ludvig Åberg this week, which I kind of am, Now, Ludwig's amazing. I genuinely think there's something here about winners needing at least a run around this golf course because it is super, super quirky. Also, a lot of uneven lies. Yeah? That's something that a lot of players like a Bryson DeChambeau, for example, don't get on with, hence why he tends to struggle at Augusta. And you look at his record here, DeChambeau, it's not great. You get a lot of uneven lies here. I just think a lot of players need a run round here. Homer, just slowly but surely getting to know this golf course. He was third here last year, 25th, 15th, third, three visits to this golf course. We know he loves the West Coast swing. Four of his six wins on the West Coast swing. So what I mean by West Coast swing for new listeners, events that they play in California, events that they play in Nevada, events that they play in Arizona. Now, technically, it runs up to the end of January, early February, and they disappear off to Florida. But I include stuff in there like TPC Summerlin, where they play the Shriners, for example, in the autumn. So just basically, you know, that geographical location over in the west coast of America. Homer just loves it out there. Four of his six wins. Two at Silverado, one at Torrey Pines, one at Riviera. When I look at players here and where they tend to play well, I mean, John Rahm's a prime example, isn't he? He's already won at Riviera Country Club. He won there last year. And he's clearly won his first ever PGA Tour event at Torrey Pines. Well, Max Homer ticks both of those boxes. And I take this, and we discussed this at the end of last year, because we were all slapping our forehead when he won the Ned Bank. And you said, Barry, well, it was so obvious because he took so much out of that Ryder Cup in Rome, where he was the top American point scorer. And he was the joint top point scorer across the whole competition with Hovland and Tyrrell Hatton. And I think that's the kind of thing that mentally gives a player a huge boost. Where do you reckon he is in the world, chaps? Have a guess. Where do you think Max Homer ranks in the world right now?
Seventh, probably. Seven.
That's pretty mad, isn't it, for Max Homer? And it's been that gradual, it's just layers, isn't it? Layers, month on month, year on year, where he's really got his head around the fact, you know, I can compete with the best players in the world.
He's up there.
I think Homer's a good bet this week at 14-1.
I've one question about him. Can he go super low? I mean, when he gets going, he's phenomenal. But does that merge into like super low scoring events? Seems like his happy wheelhouse seems to be a little bit more mid scoring.
Agreed.
Or like difficult scoring.
Couldn't disagree with you at all. And that's why we've always said he's a great old style classical golf course player, which he is. Yeah. Hence why he should do so much better in majors, but it's been that do I belong mental approach with Homer, and I think slowly he's getting there. Well, he will start to compete in majors. But the only thing I will say is Homer, he shot 23 under here last year. So yeah, I get that. He actually started last year 70-70, and then he was shot 63-66 across the weekend. So clearly can get on with that course. But yeah, I agree. I don't think he's the ultimate. You would always take, on a level playing field, I would always take, say, a Patrick Cantlay at the same price as a Max Homer on a 27-under birdie fest. But this last year's performance kind of suggests to me that Homer can really get on with this course and can shoot that sort of 26, 27 that he might need. And that same kind of goes for Colin Morikawa. I'm going with him as well at 14-1. I mean, does that need much explanation? He's finished seventh here, seventh, fifth, and second. There's definitely also something here, and this goes with Homer as well. If you look at the form of winners of this, I mean, take John Rahm last year, eighth at the Hero World Challenge Tigers tournament. He'd won the DP World Tour Championship. Harris English came here after winning that Shark shootout in Florida. Justin Thomas won here 4 years ago. He had a fifth at the World Challenge, 17th at the Zozo. He'd won the CJ Cup in the fall. So you're getting a lot of players here. Even Xander, 8th at the World Challenge, 16th at the DP World Tour Championship in Dubai. He'd won the HSBC WGC event. So you get a lot of winners in autumn that come here and win this as well. So that takes me to Colin Morikawa, who clearly won his first PGA Tour event for 2 years, or two plus years, at the Zozo in Japan back in October. 7th, 7th, 5th, 2nd here last year. As I said, he entered that with a 6-shot lead going into Sunday. Loves this golf course. The thing with Morikawa is he's such a strong driver. Yes, he's not the longest, but he's better than average and he is arrow straight. So he just finds himself in such great positions on the fairway just to attack it. And he does seem to putt quite positively here. I think when you look at our strokes gain rankings, Paul, I think he's 14th in the field for strokes gain putting on this golf course. Yeah. Seems to get on with the greens. Yeah, so those are my two at the top. I've got Morikawa at 14s. I've got Homer at 14s.
Yeah,
where are you guys chiming in price wise?
I'm with you on Morikawa, Steve, and
you are.
I looked at we opened it briefly at 16s yesterday. I didn't manage to get 16s, by the way. I got 14s, but that was soon chopped. But for a lot of the reasons that you talked about, I mean, he should have won here 12 months ago. That much is fact. I was on John Rahm 12 months ago and I'd given up. You know, you got the time difference with us over here and Hawaii. And by that point, Morikawa was clear and I'm thinking, well, Rahm's, he's gone. There's no chance he's winning this. Off to bed, wake up Monday morning and you see this massive turnaround that's happened on the... In the final round, which was fantastic to see from a betting perspective, wouldn't have been fantastic to see from a Colin Morikawa perspective. But as you said, he enjoys the course. If you look at those strokes gained stats, putting, yes, he's a little bit further down, but 3rd in this field for strokes gained off the tee, 5th for strokes gained tee to green, 7th for strokes gained approach, 3rd for strokes gained total from his 16 rounds here. So he really does enjoy this particular track. And I think the key with Colin is that we've started to see a little bit of a spark with a putter. He was, you only get traditional stats from the Zozo, but he was 2nd for putts per greens in regulation at the Zozo. And I know you've plucked some of the stats out from the Hero as well. And he putted well there as well, didn't he, for 7th place overall, I think.
Yeah, he gained, where was he? He gained over a stroke per round with the putter. He was almost 4.25 strokes gained putting across the 72 holes at the Hero World Challenge.
Yeah.
And those, again, they're Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass green, so exactly the same putting surface as here.
Yeah.
At Albany.
There's certainly some positive signs with the flat stick there. He's been putting a lot of work in with his putting coach, Stephen Sweeney, who's, it looks like they're starting to reap some dividends from the work they're putting in. So for me, Morikawa, standout each way bet this week, around about the 14-1 mark. So he's the only one I've taken at the bottom end. I've got one who's in three figures, but let's see what Barry's got towards the bottom, or top rather.
Which is, yeah, the bottom is usually where I kind of start. I'm bouncing a few names around my head and kind of tending to settle towards one. I don't know about if I'll join you on the Max thing. I might need to temper myself from just backing him every week this year, because I don't think that's a very profitable strategy, even though it's fun to be on board. I'm kind of just thinking Spieth, Fowler, Straka, Cole, they're all popping into my head.
All the listeners just chuckled. They knew that Straka was coming on the list.
Yeah.
I did have a good look at Straka. He can shoot incredibly low totals.
And that's kind of, I think I might end up sort of gravitating towards Spieth and Straka. As just, two bets there. I've one long one who I'm following you on, Steve, which we can get into later. And I might just hold it somewhere around there and just see what happens after round one, see who's actually woken up after Christmas, rather than firing everything out before the event kicks off. So, I mean, one of the rationales for Spieth, he, in your 8-week tracker, he is number one on strokes gained approach, which I really like going into this event. For context, Straka's not great there. He's 19th in that, and Fowler is 11th. So, I think, Spieth is kind of the top of those players, or that pool of players for my bet.
I put a link in to the strokes gained rankings that Paul builds, and I'll put it in the podcast description, listeners. Ricky Fowler sits atop that. 12 rounds that we've measured around here since 2016. He ranks third for tee to green, first for around the green, and first for strokes gained total. And what price is he? What can you see this week on...
Oh, was it 28, I think, or...
28s and 30s.
35 on 365, unless that's changed since I fired up the page a while ago.
Yeah, 35, 8 places each way on Ricky Fowler. Far worse bets than that.
That's tempting as well.
8 places each way for Ricky.
Here's me trying to hold back my bets.
I mean, he clearly thrives on this golf course. Because he had a quiet end to the year, didn't he? And people, I'm not sure about Ricky. But actually, I think he played the shark shootout, as I call it, the Grant Thornton. I think he finished in the top 5 or 6.
Yeah.
So he's got that December, and he played the World Challenge as well. So he's been playing a lot of golf that late November, early December. So I think Fowler at 35-1's a cracking bet.
It might get drag me in. I mean, he was interesting because he had that very hot spell in the middle of last year, but you know, you're always going to have a slight cooling off period, and maybe that's going to start to come back around. The game has turned a corner, obviously, so it's can he kind of hit the, you know, now he's kind of hit a new plateau. Can he hit the afterburners and go from there and go get a win or two this year?
I think Fowler's a cracking bet. I don't think he wins it though. I think he could certainly be a very close contender, though. I think theoretically, the two mid-price players that I had a mental fight with my own conscience about were Matt Fitzpatrick, who I think theoretically this course suits beautifully. Now, we're talking about around the green, good putter. And actually, Fitzpatrick on the quiet was in second place going into Sunday last year here. On his course debut. So I think Fitzpatrick's a very interesting look. But in the end, I went for Tom Kim, who was fifth here on course debut last year. And we know with Tom, Paul was on him at the Open Championship, I believe, when he finished second at Hoylake. And I know it's difficult to equate, you know, the Irish Sea coast near Liverpool to Maui, and the kind of mountainous terrain that you find here. And also, he's got two top six finishes at the Scottish Open, the Renaissance.
Yeah.
He clearly on the quiet. Well, he plays good golf everywhere, but he can play. I mean, he plays great golf in the desert, doesn't he? A two-time winner of the Shriners. But this is the point. The Shriners, Birdie Fest, a place where if you can get your approaches correct, you know, you can shoot some seriously low scores. And we know with Tom, his approach play is his asset. It's just whether the putter works. And I just get the feeling with Tom. He got that win in the Shriners in late October. He then came across to the DP World Tour Championship, finished top 15 on a golf course, which to me, Paul, shoot me down. I don't think the Earth course is ever going to be a Tom Kim kind of positive, because it really is flat out driving on a lot of those holes.
Yeah, it's long. Yeah,
and Tom isn't your 330 yard guy. He's 300 but straight. And I think the Earth course just punishes a lack of length ultimately.
Yeah,
this course isn't that. I know it's long, but you've got these huge undulations. And, you know, on his first attempt, fifth, I just fancy Tom Kim. So I backed him 1.5 points each way. The full, I managed to squeak 25-1 the full eight places with Bet365. He's 22-1 now. I think Tom Kim could be that kind of guy that just pops up, wins in October, and then wins this to start 2024. But yes, I love Fitzpatrick. I also do like that Ricky Fowler shout. Just with that course knowledge.
Well, all of his performances are before the changes, Ricky's, albeit very good ones, 6th, 5th, 4th, 5th.
Well, he's such a perennial winner, Barry. He struggled to get to the winners only tournament quite. Sorry. You know, with Ricky as well, we all know that he's going to win. He'll probably win one, I don't know, in the summer again at 12-1 after he's six consecutive top 10 finishes. He's so predictable. It's frightening. I have, Paul, you've got 100-1 shot, have you? Big prize?
Yeah. The only other one I've backed, which is Matt Wallace, 150. I thought 150-1 about Matt Wallace was disrespectful. And it does vary based on where you, which bookie you're using. 150's out there with three bookies I can see right now, although you're taking the bog standard five and a quarter to get that. If you want the extended places, I think you're looking 180-1 kind of bracket. Anyway, 150-1, I'll take that with a few places, because if we want someone who's been active late into the year and also someone who's been seeing the ball find the bottom of the cup, then Matt Wallace is your man. I backed him at the DP World Tour Championship, the last event of the old season on the DP World Tour. And you remember, he shot 60 on the Saturday. He birdied every single hole on the back nine that day. Broke all sorts of records. Fantastic effort that day. Couldn't quite finish it off on the Sunday. Thankfully, Nikolai Højgaard, I'd backed as well, did manage to find his way through. But Wallace finished second in the end. And I think, you know, coming into this week, with that confidence still from the performance and, you know, a good improvement from the state of his game at the back end of the season as well, I think he'll come into this and I think he can give it a good go. There've been signs that the putter had been warming prior to that. And third for strokes gained putting at the Shriners. He was third for strokes gained putting at that effort at the Earth course, and again on Bermuda grass greens. So can putt the surface. He won the Corrales last year. That got him into this event. That's another long, similar kind of length to this coastal course. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, there's a correlation there. 150-1. I'm just, that's just an absolute no-brainer for me to give that an each-way whirl for the week. See how he goes.
It's a big price, isn't it?
Mm.
I know you're only getting, he's 80-1 with Bet365 in their eight place market.
Yeah, this is it, yeah.
That's skinny, yes.
Yeah, and with the differential there, I've just got to take the fewer places and just hold my nose and see if he can get into the top five.
Barry, I know you've backed the same player that I'm on at triple digits. I'll let you into a little secret, listeners, right now. Now, this goes against everything I said at the top of the show, but there was, you know, clearly I was scanning through all of the different bookmakers this morning, very early. There was one player that Betfred had an outstanding eight places each way price on. Now, I'm on Erik van Rooyen at 110-1. Right now, I'm seeing Betfred eight places each way. 50 odds, 150-1.
You're going to top up, aren't you? Dollar cost averaging.
I am going to top up. I already have done. A little couple of quid each way. Erik van Rooyen is an interesting player this week. He sits currently, bearing in mind, I know it's early, but these players think about this stuff. In the President's Cup, he's sitting 21st. In the international squads rankings, below the likes of Tristan Lawrence, Ryo Hizatsune, and KH Lee. But you're not telling me that he hasn't got his sights on a top 12 spot. I mean, top 12 at the moment is Adam Hadwin in 12th, Nick Taylor in 13th. And I don't think at the top of their games that there's a lot of difference between a Nick Taylor and a Erik van Rooyen. He's got a chance, I think, if he plays some consistent golf this year to get into that President's Cup squad. And these are the kind of things that motivate him. And we just motivate players in general. We mentioned earlier, El Cardinal, where they played the WWT Championship, was all about 70-yard wide fairways and uphill, downhill layout with big greens. And Erik van Rooyen took that out, that emotional win, when he shot 60... I'll get there. 63 in the final round, a 9-under 63, to beat Matt Kuchar and Camilo Villegas by two shots. He shot a 9-under 63. His total for that week was 27-under par.
Mm. Yeah.
He then went home. He had a little twirl around at the Alfred Dunhill. I think it was top 30. I think he's 32nd or something. He was 15th at halfway. I think Erik van Rooyen coming here freewheeling, playing some amazing golf. You mentioned with Jordan Spieth, Barry. Van Rooyen's approach play this fall has been very, very good. If he can just make a few putts this week, he's got course experience. I think he finished 25th or something like that on his debut. Yeah, 25th here. He was 15th after 36 holes. He then finished 20th the week after at the Sony Open. I always do like that correlation as well. Sony Open, we've had multiple winners here that have won both Sony and Century. So, yeah, I just think that Erik van Rooyen at anything over 100 to 1 was a good price point. And, you know, you think, you listeners, you know, 100 to 1 in this field, what's that going to do? Ryan Palmer, Matt Jones, JJ Spawn, last 3 years here have all finished in the full each way places at 100 to 1, 150 to 1, and 100 to 1, respectively. Tom Hoagie last year, 80 to 1, finished third. So a big price player, that could be a Matt Wallace, that could be an Erik van Rooyen, it could be someone else, will get into the mixer this week. You just got to pick the right one. What are your thoughts on Erik, Barry? What tilted you to him to follow in?
Well, obviously there's some good underlying form there. I like the width of the fairways. I think he's had time to digest that win. He had Christmas and, you know, sadly to process the passing of his friend. He's just got that ability to go bonkers low on scoring. If he just gets on a run, he just seems to roll downhill. That merged with a very tempting price has come right into my scope.
Yeah. So EVR for me, Tom Kim, Colin Morikawa, Max Homer. Do you want to summarise yours, Paul?
Morikawa and Matt Wallace for me, just the two.
Barry?
Spieth and Van Rooyen, and then a decision to make. I'll probably add Ricky and maybe leave, I don't know. Ricky Straka, I'm not sure. I'm kind of a bit caught. I don't want to be launching too many bets too soon, but it feels like I might end up doing that. FOMO is real.
Hazard a guess, boys. Sepp Straka in the world rankings. Where do you reckon? Ooh. Even I was like, oh my God.
23rd.
You're both wrong. And you're wrong in the oh my God kind of way. He's 18th in the world, Sepp Straka, right now. He's above Jason Day, Tony Finau, Sam Burns, Cam Young, Ricky Fowler. That's mad.
He's been playing very well. But there's a few players there that had a, like Tony Finau had a stinker of a 2023.
Yeah. Yeah, after a decent end to 2022.
I think that's us, chaps. I hope your bets go well.
Yeah, best of luck, guys.
You too, boys.
Best of luck to the listeners. Please drop us a 5-star review on Apple. Just press the 5-star button on Spotify. That'd be fantastic. Give us a follow on X. And of course, this content is all available also on the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel. Enjoy the golf, boys, and we will be back next week for the Sony Open in Hawaii and also the Dubai Invitational. See you again soon.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system, the golf betting system.